You have the right to remain silent.
Popular culture has taught us all how to recite a Miranda warning.
You have the right to an attorney.
If you cannot afford an attorney.
You cannot afford an attorney.
One will be appointed to you.
But it doesn't say how quickly it has to happen.
They're still attempting to find counsel for you.
I've never seen backups like this.
This is a tremendous problem right now within the criminal justice system.
It's a chronic problem. It is extremely widespread.
This week on Open Record.
Let them out. Instead of sitting there waiting for months and months and months and months.
When somebody's charged with a crime, the clock is ticking.
The long wait for legal help.
Because of the delay,
the case was lost.
That's hurting more than just the accused. From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And Contact 6's Jenna Sachs is here. Hey, Jenna.
Hey.
We are recording this episode on Tuesday, January 9th, for release on Thursday, January 11th. And actually something new, for the first time, this is not only going to be available, as it always is, on video on Fox Local and on YouTube and that sort of thing. We're also going to be broadcasting this on Fox 6 on Sunday night, right? I believe after the Blitz.
Sunday night.
So hopefully it's after a Packers victory and you're all excited and you're still sticking around on Fox 6 because you just can't turn away from the excitement. If it was a loss, hey, what a season, right? I don't know what to prepare
for.
Cover
here.
I feel like there are a lot of possibilities.
But it's not exactly new. We've been doing the podcast for a few years. Yes.
Last week, we didn't even talk about it last week. Yeah. Last week was our 300th episode, which is crazy to me that we've done this 300 times, but it's looked so different over all of this time. You guys think about when we started, we were in another part of the building in a smaller, sort of more modest studio setup, and that was audio only.
Right.
And then within, I don't know, a short time after
the
pandemic hit, and we were like, what are we going to do? And so we started recording independent audio streams and then talking to each other over Zoom at home.
With the blankets
over
there.
And we had blankets pulled over our heads for better sound because you're in a house with, you know, not made for sort of studio sound. So we've done the blanket stuff and then we got back to where we were in person again. And then our you know, extraordinaire chief photographer manning the videos, which are Kale Zimney, put this studio together.
Yeah.
And we started making it a video podcast as well. So we had extra content to provide you on Fox Local and wherever else. And so here we are, episode 301. And it's going to be on Fox, the broadcast as well, Fox 6 broadcast. So we've got a lot to talk about today. We've got a story of mine that is going to be coming out actually. By the time this is released, it will have aired the night before, I believe.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
We're going to talk about that. We've got our off-the-record segment. We have a lot coming up, and we're going to set it all up when we come right back. All right. So on Wednesday night, January 10th, my latest investigation hit the Fox 6 airwaves and Fox 6 digital platforms. As we record, it's actually going to be tomorrow night, but by the time this is released, it will have aired. We're looking at a problem that has plagued Wisconsin courts for generations, really. I mean, for a long, long time. But it's one that many legal experts I talk to for the story say it is only getting worse in spite of efforts to make things better. And that is the long wait for public defenders to be appointed to represent criminal defendants. You guys have obviously been around news for a long time. It's not probably a new thing to hear that there's a wait because a public defender couldn't be found. But we're finding these longer and longer waits in more recent weeks and months.
So what prompted you to report on it this time? Because we have reported on this issue before. What brought it to you this time?
I was just, you know, people often ask, where do your stories come from? And in this case, it was viewer tips. But we had two that came in back to back. One came from Racine County, from a young man who had been in jail for months, waiting for a public defender to be appointed. And then when it finally was appointed, his case was shortly thereafter dismissed. And so he didn't go to jail for that offense. He wasn't convicted, but he had already spent months in jail for something that he was ultimately not found guilty of. And literally within a couple of days, I got a reach out from a woman in Kenosha County who said that her husband is still sitting in jail in Kenosha County and has been waiting for months for a public defender to be appointed. And she said, is there anything I can do? They keep telling us every day, call back tomorrow or call back in a few weeks. There's just nobody available. And what was interesting to me was we've been reporting on Fox 6 News about a recent pay increase, which we'll talk more about later, but a pay increase for public defenders and prosecutors in the state. And so I had the sense that maybe they're sort of resolving this problem. And yet here we are. I've got two people in two different counties independently reaching out at the same time and saying, what's going on? They're telling me they just don't have anybody. So I wanted to know, really dig deeper and say, what's going on here?
So we'll talk about the one inmate who was in the Kenosha County Jail. But then you also talked with another man who was in jail for months. What was his case?
So Calvin Eisen is his name. He is homeless right now. He says he's been homeless off and on. At the time that this crime or the lunch crime he was charged with occurred, he was living in Racine. He was renting some space in a house with some others. And someone, a man living in the same place, was shot in the leg. Police came, and the person who was shot wasn't being very forthcoming with what happened. He ultimately said he was out on the street and got shot in some other circumstance. And they said, this doesn't really add up. And they talked to someone else who was in the apartment building who said, well, this other guy, I know this guy, Calvin Eisen, he did it. And so they pointed the finger at him. There was no gun. There was no other evidence. It was an eyewitness who said this guy shot that guy and that it was over a debt of some kind. He was in Illinois at the time the charges were filed. So charges actually weren't filed immediately. He's living in Illinois, and a few months later says he checks CCAP, which is the online court records system here in Wisconsin. And he said he was checking it because he was trying to find out if he had was paid up on a debt of some other kind because he wanted to rent a place again. And he needed to know what the status of that was. And when he checked his name, he saw that there was a warrant for his arrest. And he's like, what do you mean there's a warrant for my arrest? And so he turned himself in Illinois, was extradited to Wisconsin, and was charged. He has his initial appearance in, I think it was May. And at the time, they set his bail at $20,000. Well, he said, I don't have $20,000. Mm-hmm. I can't afford to get out for that. So I need an attorney quickly. And he couldn't get one. And after, I think it was 9 days, they came back to court and said, okay, public defender's office, do you have someone? And the public defender's office issued, they put a letter that's in the court file that says, we have no one on staff, by the way. They have staff attorneys. We have no one available. We've tried 250 different private attorneys and no takers. So nothing we can do. So they continued the case. And that was something that just kept happening every few weeks. They'd come back to court. The public defender's office would say, we still don't have anyone. Now we've made 3,000 contacts or 4,000 contacts and still didn't have anyone. Calvin Eisen's sitting there. He doesn't know what to do. He's not a lawyer.
Right.
So he starts writing letters to the judge, to the prosecutor, to others saying, I'm sitting here without legal assistance and I have a constitutional right to a lawyer. So either lower my bond and let me go get out and work so that I can make some money, and I can pay for a lawyer, or get me a lawyer. And for months, he got no response.
How is the public defender system supposed to work in Wisconsin? Yeah. Who gets the lawyers? Where do they come from? Can you give us that background?
Well, we talked about in the open to this that everyone knows the Miranda warning. You guys probably recite a Miranda warning, right?
Right.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say.
You've seen Law and Order.
Right. Canon will be used against you. And of course, one of those pieces, if you cannot afford a lawyer, one will be appointed for you. But who gets those lawyers? First of all, if you cannot afford one. So people who meet income qualifications or guidelines. And one of the things I'm hearing from some of the people who deal with this every day is that more and more people are qualifying for public defenders than have in the past, which is adding to the demand for public defender representation. So that's one piece of this. But the way it works is if you qualify, if you are eligible, and there's first an eligibility determination made, once that's made, then the public defender's office, the state public defender, it's a government agency. It's their job to find someone to assign to your case. And the question is, how long do they have to assign someone? There's a lot of legal debate that's been bandied about over the years as to, while you have a right to an attorney, at what point in the process do your constitutional rights kick in? Mm-hmm. Is it the moment you're arrested? Is it the moment you have an initial appearance in court?
Right.
Is it as soon as reasonably possible after your initial appearance? And in practice, what that has been is as soon as reasonably possible after that initial appearance. But what's reasonable? And that's one of the things that's still sort of being determined.
So Calvin's been writing letters and, hey, I need this public, defendant and all this stuff. So what eventually happened? Because, he can only write so many letters and sit for so long. So where is his case now?
Well, what happened in his case is something that I think a lot of people who are concerned about this issue are worried happens with too many people. He hit a point where he said, I can't wait any longer. I'm just sitting here in jail. I'll represent myself. Let me just represent myself. And I, for this story, we interviewed the Racine County District Attorney who prosecuted his case, Patricia Hansen. And she said, it's not fair for these people who have no legal background to go up against me.
Right.
I'm schooled in this. This is my job. Mm-hmm. I know the law. They're outmatched. So if they go up against me without a lawyer, it's just not fair. Mm-hmm. And their legal rights aren't protected. It's not the way the system's supposed to work. Once he said, I want to represent myself, whether or not this was a coincidence or whether or not this played into the ultimate decision, he finally got a public defender in August. He'd been sitting in jail for 3 months at that point. He got a public defender appointed. And by that time, the public defender's got to get up to speed now. Got to get all the discovery and materials and look into all of this. And at a certain point, the prosecution has to reach out and talk to the victim and witnesses and say, okay, we're getting ready. And the state found out they couldn't locate the victim, or they did locate the victim and the victim was out of state. And that victim, who was not cooperative with police to begin with, is saying, I don't want to come back to Wisconsin. I don't want anything to do with this. That's the key witness. The victim is the number one witness in this case who points the finger and says, he shot me, reluctantly pointed the finger and said that because he didn't say that at first. And the prosecution had no choice. They dismissed the case. So the question I had going into this, you sort of wonder, okay, do we feel sympathetic for someone if in fact he shot a guy? But we don't know. And we'll never know because the case never got to trial, and it never got to trial in large part because of this long delay that meant the victim was gone. So in some ways you could look at this and say, he faced an injustice by sitting in jail without representation. You also have the concern that the victim didn't get justice and you know, the public didn't get justice for a crime because this case took so long. So in some ways, everybody loses here.
So you mentioned pay increases for public defenders. I know you've mentioned they have a heavy caseload already. Is there anything else contributing to the problem besides not enough pay, or is it a matter of not enough
people?
Well,
I think that's the big thing. There are a lot of factors that are contributing to this, and pay is one of them because obviously you have a hard time attracting people to do this work when the pay is very low. And as I mentioned before, the public defender's office has people on staff who work full-time as assistant public defenders, but they can't handle all of the cases because there are just too many of them, misdemeanors and felonies, juvenile cases, mental health cases. So they farm some of them out to private attorneys who are willing to take on some public defender cases at a rate pay rate that is certainly lower than they can make doing other things. There are certainly attorneys who want to do that because they think it's part of their job to give back, part of their job to help the system. But there's still a level at which the pay is so much lower than what they could make. Maybe they have to meet a certain quota of billable hours for their firm, and to do this at the paltry rate of reimbursement that has been here for generations, they just can't justify it. And that has changed recently, very recently. For a long time, it was a $40 an hour reimbursement rate for a private attorney to take a public defender case. $40 an hour is nothing in the legal world. It's a pittance, and it doesn't even cover the cost of some of the time and travel and other things. There's a separate travel reimbursement as well, but it was also very small. I think maybe $25 an hour for travel. That was upped a few years ago to $70 an hour. But even by the time it was up to $70 an hour, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had made a determination for its own public defenders, or I think they have public defenders who take some of the work that they do. They had already determined $70 an hour was just unconstitutionally low. And here was the state increasing the pay to $70 an hour. So just this past year, the state legislature and Governor Evers agreed to up it again. Obviously, the state's had a couple of good financial years. There's a surplus, and they put money into both new prosecutors, pay increases for prosecutors, and then also pay increases for public defenders. And they upped the reimbursement rate to $100 an hour. It still doesn't match what most people can make doing private legal work, but it's better. It's more attractive. The question is that enough to get more people interested in taking these cases? And how long will it take before that sort of critical mass is reached? You asked what are some of the other things. I mean, pay is one, but we talked about more people qualifying. as indigent and therefore qualifying for public defenders. More cases being charged in some ways. There are some concerns. The public defender's office said, this isn't all us. There are some prosecutors, they believe, who are charging too many cases. Now, that becomes politically controversial because certainly if you talk to a lot of members of the public, they would say prosecutors aren't doing enough. They need to charge more. They need to be harsher. Judges need to be putting people away longer. So there's certainly a political pressure not to back off. The question is, are there some cases that could be more appropriate, lower level offenses that are more appropriate for diversion programs where you could focus more on these higher level violent felonies? That's another factor. So there's a lot that plays into this overall shortage, and pay is just one piece of that.
Well, and the pay, didn't that prompt a class action lawsuit?
It did, and I think that's a good time for us to take a break, because when we come back, there is, in fact, a legal attempt in Wisconsin to do something about this, and we'll talk about that right after the break. All right, so we know that this is a problem. We know it's still a problem, even after the pay raises, that public defenders are hard to find, and private attorneys that could be appointed to these cases are hard to find. So, you know, what are you going to do about that? Well, there is a team of lawyers that is trying to change what's happening in Wisconsin, and they filed a class action lawsuit in Brown County. That's where Green Bay is. They filed this lawsuit in 2022. So that was before these pay increases. But I've talked to the attorneys, three of the attorneys who filed this, and they say, even with the pay increases, this problem goes so much deeper than just the pay for public defenders. So they filed a lawsuit where they named a bunch of plaintiffs, and these are people who were sitting in Brown County Jail for 120 days or more without representation. And some of them had been sitting there for more than a year without a lawyer, which is pretty extreme, but it happens. Why did they select Brown County? Well, it was because when they actually pulled data from the state court system online, they actually had they paid a firm to extract data from the system at a point in time. And they looked county by county all across the state to say, where are the longest waits? And there were more people waiting for public defenders in Brown County for 120 days or more than anywhere else in the state. So that's where they decided to sue. What are they asking for is really the interesting question. And among other things, they're just asking that the public defense system as it exists in Wisconsin be declared unconstitutional. They say it's just set up to fail. There aren't enough, whether it's too many cases, whether it's not enough public defenders, they're not able to assign someone quickly enough for people's constitutional rights to be met. And that comes back to that fundamental question of how long is too long? How long is reasonable to wait for an appointment? And in their initial complaint, the initial 300 and something or 400 and something page complaint, including the attachments or exhibits, they asked for the state to for a judge to declare that 14 days was a reasonable amount of time, and anything beyond that is too much. That's a really short window compared to what we're seeing, right? So that would be a fairly controversial thing. Now, when I talked to the attorneys and actually set up an interview with them, we started with a Zoom. I asked them right off the bat about this 14-day thing, and they said, well, wait, actually, that's not in the case anymore, and it's ongoing litigation. They didn't want to talk a lot about that. That was in the original complaint. One of the claims or one of the types of relief they were requesting from the court was this 14-day period be established. They've backed away from that since then. They filed an amended complaint later on where they said they simply want the court to declare that the current system is unconstitutional, that the delays these plaintiffs are experiencing are unreasonable, and that they want the state to be required or ordered to set up a system that results in timely appointments. That still leaves that question of what's timely how is that determined?
Well, okay, and this might seem like a dumb question, but they file this and they're asking for certain things, saying that they want to shorten the time and all that. But how does that happen? Because if there aren't the public defenders, if there are too many cases, the math doesn't add up, and it may never add up. And so how do they propose that that happens?
I think that's a very good question as to how you make it work. I think there are a number of factors. One, of course, is, as we talked about, maybe prosecutors in the state come up with more diversion programs for lower level offenses. Maybe there is a huge influx of money to have more public defenders available. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of strategies, I suppose, that could come up with. Other states have had similar lawsuits where judges have ruled that a 14-day or something like that delay is really an ideal or a goal, then anything more than that could in fact be a violation of constitutional rights. I think the first step, the sense I get from them, the first step is getting a court to declare that what we have now isn't meeting constitutional muster. Yeah. And from there, they could start to compel, you know, some sort of solution.
Yeah.
But I think the beginning point is just to get a court to say what we're doing right now isn't right, because I think that seems to be the tricky part here is, at what point is it unconstitutional? We know that if you don't get an attorney appointed and you qualify for one, well, that's a violation of your rights. But at what point have you not had an attorney appointed? The judge in any individual case won't proceed with the case if there is a defendant who says, I want the attorney I'm eligible for. Mm-hmm. The question, and I think the great concern that the attorneys I spoke to in this case have, is there's pressure that builds when you're the defendant.
Right.
To just plead out, to represent yourself, mm-hmm. because at a certain point you do the calculation. If I'm found guilty, my sentence is going to be less than I've already served sitting here waiting. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, I just want to get on with my life. I'm better off pleading guilty. I'll just plead guilty. And it may well be that many of those people who knew were guilty in the first place, but some might not be. Mm-hmm. And their real concern is we have a system that's set up for people's rights to be represented, right. to be protected. And even Patricia Hansen, the DA I talked to, said their rights should be protected because it protects us and it protects victims from an appeal that gets a case overturned and therefore results in a victim being put through a case for the second time. So there are benefits to victims and to the rest of the system in having defendants have their rights properly represented.
So how does this compare to what other states are doing? Do other states have the same problem as Wisconsin?
Yeah, this is not a Wisconsin-specific problem. Certainly, Wisconsin is one of the states that is dealing with a fairly extreme situation right now and has been for some time. But there are other states that have had very similar things. I know, I think they mentioned Oregon is one. I think Missouri's had this problem. There are a lot of states that have dealt with this. This is a nationwide problem. And so it's not just something that's being looked at here in Wisconsin. This class action lawsuit focuses on Wisconsin. And I should point out, they filed the case in Brown County. But when we looked at the data of where some of the long waits are, I found it really interesting that number 2 and 3 on the list were Racine and Kenosha counties. They just happened to be the two places where I got these tips back to back were from people in Racine and Kenosha counties. Milwaukee County certainly handles more cases than anybody in the state, and they were 10th on the list. So they're still high on the list in terms of these waits. But it's not like if you imagine, well, it must be Milwaukee County where there's the biggest problem. Not necessarily. They have a more robust public defender's office. So it's still a concern in Milwaukee County, but there are other it's a problem statewide. And of course, it is a problem nationwide. And I think there's a lot being played out in different places as to what are the best strategies for tackling this.
Well, and I obviously we know what the class action lawsuit is asking. And obviously, I have to assume that the state public defender's office would like more public defenders in their arsenal. What do they want to see done differently?
Well, so you know, this is what's really interesting. I talked for the story to Adam Plotkin, who's a lobbyist for the public defender's office. I see him in Madison a lot testifying in hearings, and he's very knowledgeable. But what's really interesting about this class action lawsuit is you have criminal defense attorneys and the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and other organizations that represent the rights of defendants who are suing the Wisconsin Public Defender's Office. That's the defendant in the case. So it's criminal defense lawyers suing criminal defense lawyers. It's really an interesting legal situation when you think about that. So in a sense, Adam Plotkin's kind of on the defensive here and saying, hang on a minute, this isn't all our fault. We're doing the best we can with the resources we have, but there are too many cases. There's too much demand. We need to come up with a solution. I did ask him about one of the things I thought was interesting was caseload. How many cases do your attorneys take to begin with? Has there been a decrease in the number of attorneys that are working these cases? And I didn't necessarily find what I expected in the data, because I'm talking to people who are telling me, well, Brian, one of the problems is there are fewer criminal defense lawyers even going into this area of law. There just aren't people coming out of law school. We talked to Julius Kim, a high-profile criminal defense lawyer, who said there just aren't as many people doing this anymore because it's not as attractive. But when I looked at the actual numbers from the Wisconsin Bar Association and from the State Public Defender's Office, there really hasn't been a dramatic decrease or a decrease at all in the number of people who are going into law. How many are specializing in criminal defense law? That was a little harder to find. State Public Defender's Office tends to employ that. They're authorized for 350 attorney positions, staff attorneys. They tend to have maybe 10 or 20% turnover at any given time. But that has been consistent through the years. What's changing, I think, is the demand. It's the number of cases. And so he's kept referring to the need to change the demand side. And again, I say that that's one that's got, it's fraught with politics, because if you imagine the people, if you imagine John Chisholm, who's now retiring from that position, not going to run for re-election, but if you imagine him come out and saying, hey, everyone, we've decided to charge fewer cases, the political explosion that would come from something like that. When I talked to Patricia Hansen in Racine County, though, she said she's a big proponent of diversion programs. Getting people into programs where there is a chance to get them, you know, keep them out of the criminal courts, get them through these systems where there's a recidivism rate that's maybe relatively low. She said maybe 15% do come back, but that's 85% I never have to see again. And that's 85% of the people who aren't sitting in jail and aren't clogging up the system, and they open up the pipes for the others. So that's one of the possibilities. The question is, you know, it's always the devil's in the details. Who do you divert, and under what circumstances, and what are the recidivism rates, and, you know, what does that do to someone who might be a chronic offender? So those are all questions, but I think if you talk to Adam Plotkin, he would say we just need less cases.
I have to wonder about the real life impacts on these cases being drawn out. Think about, like, the victims, the emotional impact on them, and these people who are being held in jail. I assume it leads to loss of employment and other family issues. Do you hear a bit about that?
Yeah, actually, we didn't talk about this yet, but one of the people we profiled in the story is a guy named Sean Rasmussen, who's still, as we do this recording, sitting in the Kenosha County Jail without an attorney. He's been there since October. He's charged with burglary and theft. I get the sense from having spoken with him from jail and talking to his wife that whether or not he's found guilty, he just wants his case to get moving, because he's ready to do whatever it takes to get back to contributing to his family. She has a 9-year-old. He does a lot of the caretaking for that 9-year-old. His wife, who we talked to, Melody Rose, said that she has severe health issues. She has a heart condition. After we interviewed her, she actually went to the hospital in heart failure. And so she doesn't leave the house. She can't drive. There's a 9-year-old who needs to get to school. Yeah. He's the one who drives. So the whole time he's been in jail, she's been relying on other family members to do the driving, the grocery shopping, to help keep the household afloat. Yeah. And she's saying, whether he's going to be sentenced or not, let's get this going. I want to get him back home. You also then have victims who are waiting for this to be resolved. And in this particular case, okay, it's a theft case. Maybe it's not such an emotional situation. But if you imagine a victim of a shooting or a homicide or something that's much more serious, and they're waiting for a public defender, every time they take off work, they get childcare, they come to court, they sit there, and the judge says, we have to continue this another month because there's no attorney. And then they do the whole same thing a month later, and they come back to court and they say, we have to continue this another month. That's a hardship for everyone involved, and certainly a hardship for the victims as well. Like you said, the defendants who can't work. So they're already in a financial strait because they can't afford their attorney. They're sitting in jail. They can't work and pay the bills. So that snowballs. If you can get someone legal representation early, even if they're guilty and it leads to a guilty plea or a trial and the jury finds them guilty, you get that process moving more quickly. You unclog the courts. But right now there's such a backlog. It's a problem for everyone.
Well, and so backlog, caseload, workload, that's one of the issues, obviously. And there's been a study done about it. And so what does that tell us?
Well, for years, many years, there was a standard for how many cases a public defender should be able to handle. There's been some more recent research that says that's way off the mark. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. So if you go all the way back to the 1970s, 1973, I think it is, and I've got a bunch of paperwork that I filled out here, but there was a National Advisory Commission on Criminal Justice Standards that made an estimate for how many cases public defenders should be able to handle at any one time. And the standards they set were, if it's felony cases, it's 150 cases per year. If it's misdemeanor cases, 400 cases per year. Mental health cases, 200 a year. Juvenile cases, 200 a year. Or appeals, 25 cases a year. Those are very generic numbers. They're just sort of big, whole numbers. And the problem with those numbers is 150 felony cases, it doesn't say if that's a homicide. It doesn't distinguish if that's a lower level felony. Misdemeanors can vary sort of all over the map. And since 1973, each case has gotten much more time intensive. You think about all of the body camera video and ring cameras and surveillance videos that you have to go through just second by second. Mm-hmm. There's so much more digital media and material available to evaluate. So it's great that there's more evidence. Right. The unfortunate thing is there's more time. So each of these cases takes more time. So more recently, there's something called the National Public Defense Workload Study that looked at these workload questions, and they determined that there should be different standards depending on the type of case. And I just will point out that they have actually determined that in an adult criminal case, the time needed for one case, for an attorney on one case, ranged anywhere from 13 and a half hours to 286 hours. So you imagine if you've got a bunch of 286-hour cases, you're going to fill up really fast, and you're not going to be able to take on more. If you've got all 13 and a half hour cases, you can do quite a bit more. So the whether it's a high severity felony, whether it's a middle or low severity case, whether we're talking about an OWI versus an armed robbery can make a big difference. But that becomes more complicated to measure. And when I talked to Adam Plotkin at the Public Defender's Office, I said, what do you guys think of this new National Public Defense Workload Study? It says essentially your workload should be lower, but he said there's a lot that needs to be fleshed out, and they're actually still looking into sort of assigning researchers to look at how does this apply to the state of Wisconsin? How does this work here? The Public Defender's Office only has 300 or 350 staff attorneys, but they do have another 300 employees statewide, some of them who can do legal research and some of the case management behind the scenes. So that does help. How does it work here in Wisconsin? I think that's still to be determined. And that's really the thing I took away from that conversation was this is still in flux. What we know is somebody like Calvin Eisen sat in jail. Or actually, I really think of Sean Rasmussen. We were interviewing Melody Rose when he called her from jail to have a daily conversation. And so he agreed to talk to us. And he said, every day I call, they say, sorry, nobody available. Try back tomorrow. Or in some cases, try back next week or try back in a few weeks. Whatever the answers are, that's not what should be happening. Is someone calling and they say, sorry, we got nothing. Mm-hmm. And more right now, that's the situation is they're getting the answer. We've just got nothing.
And did you say what the current caseload typically is? Was it something like 150 cases at a time?
What Adam Plotkin told me, and this is, again, not distinguishing between misdemeanors and felonies or the severity of those cases. He said it's typically typical that a staff attorney will have anywhere from 125 to 150 open cases at any given time, not per year, but at one time.
Seems so like a lot to keep track of.
Think about it now, just for us. I'm juggling a dozen stories in some state of whatever, and I feel overwhelmed with that. That's 12. Imagine having 150 stories that you're working on at any one time. Well, in a way, that's what that is. Each and every one of those is a story of a victim, is a story of a defendant.
Right.
So that's 125 to 150 open cases. Just how much time can you spend on each one? And you imagine each defendant is reaching out to that public defender and going, hey, have you looked at this? Have you pulled that? Did you get that video? Have you talked to this person? And their responses or their experiences, my public defender's not responding to me.
Sure.
Well, they've got 125 other cases to work on. So obviously that's it's a concern. It's an issue. Is that too many? And that's really ultimately the question. If it's too many, then what needs to be done to bring that down? I think that's still that's the $64 million question. But I think that's a good time for us to go off the record, which we'll do when we come back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. And as always, here to ask us that question on episode number 301... is executive producer Sarah Smith.
Okay. I realized before I asked this that we're all kind of at that age where, I don't know, I do it a lot, but I use a lot of emojis in my texts.
Still
I
do.
Me too. I understand that the youth? Next generation, the youth of our world, they think it's old. They think it's very boomer.
See, I'm so far behind, I still don't even use a lot of emojis.
Oh, I love it.
It's already gone conveys. Out, so I'm back in fashion now. Okay, all right.
Good work. My question, though, I guess, is for all of us emoji users in the world. What is your most used emoji?
What's my most used?
Most used in text. Like, you know how you can you click it and it's all your top used ones in there? Like, what do you
always... Oh, like the
always,
most recently
yes.
used. Yeah.
I mean, the thumbs up.
Okay.
I do that a You're lot a in the work up. With the you know, Slack channel.
Okay. I feel like the thumbs up. We can talk about it, but does the thumbs up sometimes, I worry the thumbs up seems a little
flippant,
or just a little short with someone.
That's like, just sarcastic. My way of saying, like, got it.
Well, or yeah, it's almost kind of like, don't have time for you. Yep, thumbs cool. up. Moving on to other things. Do you ever feel like that way when you yeah. repeat one?
Oh, sorry, guys.
No, I've never.
Lots of thumbs up.
Is that like K? Okay.
Oh, a little. No, well, it's maybe. Probably like KK.
I don't know that I read it that way when people send it to me, but I always worry if I just thumbs up someone that they think, oh, didn't have time to actually type out a word.
Well, no, like acknowledging okay. I
yes.
saw it.
Yes.
Right.
Like
yes.
my
yes.
husband says, could you pick up this prescription? Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Got it. You know, you don't need but to have I a long drawn really conversation.
But I also feel really like, oakley doakley. That's yeah, kind that's of okay.
So I imagine if my wife said, hey, could you go
I don't
pick
do it
up
in real life.
Like no, in person. Neither. Right. Right. That's
if we're I never in person. Thumbs up.
I mean, like she's in the kitchen. Yes. I'm about to leave. I've got keys in my hand. And she goes, hey, could you pick up milk at the store? And I go, that does, seems sarcastic.
Right. It does. It seems like, a little, yeah. Hey, next time, could you load the dishwasher this way? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do live with little people, and it is really cute when they do it, though. Oh, if they turn around and they give you a little thumbs up.
Do they actually in person give
yeah,
you a thumbs up?
Yeah, it's really cute. Okay. It's really, so they can pull it off.
I lost my coffee there.
Okay.
So but for me, it's, I think it's probably... like the laughing cry
uh-huh,
emoji,
yeah.
but
yes.
you know, in response to a joke or something
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, it's because I'm so the funny over text.
Yeah,
it's also to say this is a joke, like in case it doesn't really, come right, across, yeah. like if it's something
so
a little sassy, you know, right, yeah. don't
soften,
take this seriously.
Well, I use that also because I used it sort of in the evolution of things in place of LOL.
I don't do LOLs.
Gone.
Yeah, I won't.
So now it's just a laughing with the cry.
That's true, which I guess is like the boomer version of LOL.
If I look at my phone right now, it's the crying with laughter, the heart, the poop.
The heart. Yep.
Poop.
And then the
I
fire.
I was just going to ask, who's really using the poop?
I've never used the
of
poop.
Of course you haven't.
I'm looking right now. How do I? So I click it, and then the most recent ones will be there at the top? I guess, actually, I've got smiley faces.
Smiles.
Oh, no. These are the frequently used.
Oh.
See, there it is, the crying one.
Oh,
and then there's the moon because I say goodnight to my daughter who's in college.
Cute. The kissy face.
There's a little kiss one. There's
the
hearts.
Throw up one.
I do like the one with all the hearts around
it. The throw up one is, you can't see it from way over there, but I do use that a lot because someone will write something that's, you know, like, oh, can you believe this? And then I do the vomit emoji.
I'm very much the face melty one. That where they're like smiling, but the face is melting. That's my favorite.
What did that one mean?
Like, is that because I'm like, I bought hot lunch for my kids this month 7 times. And then every time they come home after hot lunch, they're like, I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one. So I'll text my girlfriends and be like, well, there's another hot lunch off the list. And so like you started out happy and now it's like, ugh.
That one kind of reminds me of like the everything's fine meme where he's sitting in the fire. Everything's fine.
That's probably why I use it a lot because I'm like, it's fine. Everything's fine. Whoa.
I used to use that face palm a lot.
Yeah.
The little person with their head.
You can't like it's so small. Sometimes you can't see. So I have to like there's a person there and I'm looking. Are they doing this? Are they going like this?
Oh, I like
really
this one
tell.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big one.
And maybe it's just because I'm getting old and I can't see well, but you're trying to
if it's really detailed, you need to communicate with a gift. Then
with a gif and that is a hard G, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes,
it is gif. Okay.
Yes,
that's taking
me time.
I don't do
that too often.
Ooh.
That takes energy. You have to go through and search for it.
You know what's frustrating?
If you get good at it, though,
right?
What's frustrating with gifs is when you're looking for one that says just the right thing and you don't find one, and then you go, "No, I should just make one." And I don't know if you've tried to make one.
My have husband does it a lot.
Okay. So then I've got to go to like a GIF generator.
Yes.
and then I find out that I've just spent an hour trying to figure out how to make this work because I don't get it. And does it email to me somewhere? How does this end up in the searches?
But isn't
I don't
know perfect how it is. At the end?
I've made maybe two that actually worked.
All right. Well.
So
it always ends up just being a still picture.
Yeah. Or then tech savvy, I'm sure, but when you send one and then you see that you've posted it somewhere and it shows a still that they have to click and go somewhere, it's not really working the way it's supposed
to work.
It doesn't
hit the way it should, right?
I'm sure somebody listening to this or watching this is like, well, he doesn't understand.
What a dum-dum.
Yeah, but you know what? I could change the time on my VCR back in the day.
Well, I'm wondering about the youth, right? So if they're not using these little emojis, do they just not read into the tone as much as we do?
No,
like,
and then they use abbreviations.
Oh, okay. Like,
or is it all like letters, I feel like it's much more visual. Like it is much more of a photos and GIFs and things like that, right?
Yeah.
That's how the communication goes.
I don't know. Or then they like shorten up words. My daughter says perf. Short perf. Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm like, is that the rest of that word was too much?
Does she say, what is it? Riz?
No, she does not use riz. She uses drip, but that's not an abbreviation.
Wait, what is drip?
Whoa. Wait, I'm not even sure what that one is.
Like,
I
don't know. Your, I think it's your either your jewelry or your outfit.
See, that, I was like, is that about sweating?
It's your, no, it's does like that mean your. It's good? It's like, yeah, like, oh, sweet drip. Like, I think it's, yeah.
You think?
Well, no, I know it's either jewelry or outfit.
So we have some friends who have this a board game, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's a board game where they. It's like Parcheesi, where the way the board's set up, but each quadrant, you get questions from a different generation. And so you get boomer questions, Gen X questions, so Gen Z, that sort of thing. And so we're in the Gen X area, and I'm getting like music and other things. I'm like, this game is easy. We're rocking it. We got into the Gen Z area, and I was lost. And the one that we had to learn that I didn't know that none of us could get was the meaning of yeet. And one of the people we were playing with called her son, who was like, oh, yeah, it's like when you throw something at somebody, you yeet it at him. And I don't.
Yeet. My son uses it. They use it in a lot of words. So it's like, yeet. Like when you like whip it at someone or chuck it. You just yeeted it.
It doesn't
and sometimes
make
it's
sense.
Past tense, like I yeeted it.
I yeeted.
And you have to say it like, yeet.
Do you know?
Hey, a drip is swagger. It's how you look. Okay. You're hot, you're cool, you're on point, you got the sauce. I'm not kidding, that's exactly what this interweb.
You got the sauce.
Never heard that
I'll
in my
never
life.
Say you got the sauce, unless you literally have a condiment that's like Arby's sauce.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm up to speed with any of this, and over time it gets worse. And I'm starting to realize that why people, you know, old people become the way they do, because I'm becoming that.
I know.
I'm going to sit on the couch and I'm going to just gripe about things. And I'm gonna, my grandfather looked through his TV guide and then he had a magnifying glass.
Yes.
He looked at his doctor's bill and he would just gripe about every chart in the doctor's bill. And
you're
going to
get the telephone with the big buttons on it next. Yeah,
the jitterbug or whatever.
That's right.
Well, I at least need something with bigger emojis so I can see what they are because I don't know what they are.
I know.
And by the way, I don't think I've ever used a poop emoji.
Oh, no, yeah, no, I probably have.
I'm sure,
hand my kid my phone and I'm like, hey, can you
text? You use the poop emoji multiple times a week?
It's in my frequent.
Why?
In what context
are you using
it?
Well, if something's
we can
a real...
talk about that off the record.
That's after hours. But if it's like a really crummy situation.
Okay, like, got it.
Yeah.
I think
if
sure.
it's yeah, crummy.
Like if I say this air fried chicken didn't turn out very well, and then you send a poop emoji.
Or, yeah, yeah.
I think if I ever used it, it was in reference to a diaper, like an actual diaper. But even then, I don't know if I ever did.
The problem with the poop emoji is early on, I thought it looked like soft serve ice cream. So I thought it was a dessert.
Yeah.
And then I'm glad I didn't use it because Frosting. That would be, you know, hey, you want to try some of this? And
he just looks so happy in the emoji. Like, look at me, I'm poop.
We should all go out for and then send a poop emoji. What?
I'm sorry, I'm not coming to that gathering.
No, I don't want to come over to your house anymore.
I'll skip.
All right, well, we're going to wrap things up. We'll take one more break and we'll wrap things up on this first broadcast episode of Open Record. We'll do that when we come right back. All right, we're back to wrap things up. I have to point out, by the way, we have more on the table than we have ever
we sure
had.
Do.
It's like
so
our
much.
First one that's going to be on the actual Fox 6, and we have stuff everywhere. We're recording two podcasts this week because of just where people are going to be, so we're going to be recording one after this that will air in a couple of weeks or be released the following Thursday in audio version. Obviously a lot is here, so it just looks like a disaster. But I also just feel sort of chaotic right now because like it's
snowing.
Well, it's sort of snowing outside, but it's not really snowing outside. It's like really
wet. I haven't looked outside in the last hour, but I do know Spencer Tracy was in West Bend today, and it was snowy there. So,
now,
I know it's coming.
This is being recorded on Tuesday, January 9th. Mm-hmm. By the time this is released on Thursday, maybe not much more snow than whatever will have happened today. But then when this is broadcast on Fox 6 on Sunday, we'll have had maybe a couple of more snow
couple
events,
of
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
So there could be a bunch of snow on the ground by then.
Right. Yeah. So right now it's that rainy period where we're all saying, was school supposed to be canceled or not?
Right.
And then it will probably start snowing later this morning, or so they're saying.
Yeah.
You in the future will know.
I'm excited. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, which 50% of us in a couple days are going to be in other temperatures that are not
Wisconsin. I was really excited. I'm going to New York and on Sunday. Well, so when by the time this is on Fox 6, I'll be in New York. And I was worried about the fact that it's going to be like 0 degrees here. It's going to be really, really cold. But then I looked at the map and it's like the whole Midwest is super, super cold. And this little strip along the eastern seaboard, about 38 degrees. So
nice for you.
Well,
sorry, suckers.
Nicer for Kale, though. Where are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Montego Bay, Jamaica.
Yeah.
For Sunday, it says 85. It's okay. It's all right.
I'm going to send you a poop emoji.
I'm going to schedule it.
That is, man.
So
well, anyway.
Great.
We thank you for watching our first one here on Fox 6. Or if you're listening, as always, episode 301, thanks for being a fan of Open Record. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible. Jenna, Sarah, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And of course, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, manning the video switcher, who's getting a poop emoji from me, Hale Zimny. With that, I'm Brian Polson, and we'll be back next week.